Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
HarperCollins presents Her Majesty's Royal Coven by Juno Dawson.
Neve, Helena, Elle, and Leone, four lifelong friends who also happen to belong to the oldest coven in the United Kingdom. When oracles predict the genocide of all witches, the women must choose where their allegiances lie, with the coven or with each other. The New York Times called Her Majesty's Royal Coven superb and charming. From best-selling author Juno Dawson comes a brand new fantasy trilogy for fans of A Discovery of Witches or The Craft. Out now in hardback and audiobook, narrated by Nicola Coughlan, star of Bridgerton.
Her Majesty's Royal Coven by Juno Dawson.
Hello and welcome to So I Got to Thinking, the weekly Sex and the City podcast where we take the timeless questions of Carrie Bradshaw and apply them to modern life and love. You are listening to Nathan Fine and Bitsy Von Muffling. It's Juno Dawson and Dylan B. Jones. And once again, Dylan is joining us from an overseas location, as if he were in America's Next Top Model contestant. Hello.
Hello. I'm coming to you from a villa in Paxos. I'm here for a wedding. It's all very Mamma Mia. I'm going to put on some dungarees and run around with my hair flowing later.
I believe it. You have a lot of billowy shirts as well. So I imagine you are billowing.
You know, the white linen is all out. The slightly Sienna Miller Aztec boho chic necklaces are out as well. It's a whole thing.
You are living your best life. And I don't know what this says about us, that we are both two holiday families this year as well. Have we become the people we hated?
Don't.
I think we have.
Don't tell Greta.
Oh, is this a bad time to introduce our special guest this
Greta
week?
Thunberg.
Massive Sex and the City fan, Greta Thunberg is here. I do not like them travelling to the Hamptons.
You have ruined my childhood. No, we're not making fun. We love Greta. We're not making fun of... Well, we are making fun of Greta, but...
We are. But we love her. I mean, the reason we're making fun of her is because clearly she has achieved more in her... What is she, like 16 years? She has achieved more in her 16 years than we have achieved in our whole lives. So, who's laughing? Greta Thunberg, she's an icon. This week, we love a charade or a charade. Depending on how you pronounce that word. Dylan, are you a charade or a charade?
I say charade.
I'm a charade. We used to play charades. Mm.
Oh, maybe it is. I don't know. I think a charade is American and my dad's American. Maybe that's where I got it from.
Oh, that could be, yeah. Oh, well. Oh, well. Either way, Dylan, do you have, all the way from Greece, a delicious potted synopsis containing olives and also the plot?
And a bit of taro masalata.
Delicious.
So we're at the end of season 5 already.
I know.
It's been a very strange, kooky season.
It was. If you remember, if you cast your minds back, this was referred to as the burner season.
Yeah.
Because to accommodate Cynthia Nixon and Sarah Jessica Parker, they decided not to film a full season so they could go on parental leave. We already, it's like we barely started. And it's obviously what's quite interesting about these episodes is the plot. Well, we say that. I was going to say we haven't covered a lot of territory in that we seem to have focused a lot on sort of Carrie's professional life. But this last episode basically sets up everything that's going to happen in season six.
Yeah.
So actually, there's quite a lot of quite significant plot stuff this week.
It's actually such a setup, isn't it? Like, at the very end, it's such a setup. It's not one of the episodes where it jumps between the four of them so much. A lot of it is kind of all of them together going to the wedding in the Hamptons of Bobby Fine and Bitsy Von Muffling, Nathan Lane, and I do not know the actor's name who plays Bitsy.
I will find that out, because obviously she has appeared multiple times.
Yes, and she's back in, and just like that as well, she makes an unexpected, shocking return.
Well, I mean, poor Bobby Fine, who we revealed died of COVID. Yeah. Brutal.
Clearly Nathan Lane didn't want to come back.
Bitsy Von Muffling is played by an actor called Julie Halston.
And how amazing Julie Halston is. I'd forgotten, particularly in this first appearance, just so entertaining. The two of them together, Bobby Fine and Bitsy, they're great. I love it.
She's really, really good because the reason that I like her is that she could be a really hateful character in that she's obviously old money kind of society person. But there is something so warm and lovable about Bitsy Von Muffling when she has made numerous appearances. I'm looking at her career now, and this should not come as a surprise, but she's a massive, massive Broadway talent in that she was in A Man Who Came to Dinner, The Women Hairspray Revival, Gypsy, Anything Goes Revival, Tootsie Revival. You know, she has worked constantly.
Is that all there is?
One last time for the cheap seats in the back.
I did enjoy that at the wedding when they were a lot of their snide remarks I was not here for, but no. there were a few that I enjoyed for sure. Those are just some mopeds going past for anyone who
I think that's why we're not going to edit that out, because that is a taste of grease.
It is.
And given that this will be going out sort of the second week of September, a little taste of summer all
a
the way
bit
from
of
Paxos.
Sunshine, yeah. A little bit of sunshine.
Yeah, what am I bringing from Worthing? Just the traffic going down the A27.
The occasional ambulance.
The occasional ambulance going to Worthing Infirmary. Yeah, it's as nice as Paxos in many ways, yeah. So who is Bobby Fine and Bitsy Von Muffling, Dylan?
So Bobby Fine is a friend of Carrie's. Mm-hmm. From her, and I'm always kind of intrigued when her life pre when we've been dumped into it, when it's referenced. It seems she kind of was how she was in kind of season one, but even more amplified. Like, it seems she loved nightlife and was always out in the clubs and like didn't have much money and was like running around New York meeting all these interesting characters. In the same way we meet Lexi Featherstone in season six, who's like a party girl who knew Carrie back in the day. So he's one of those. And then Bitsy, she's just sort of a society woman, isn't she? Like, she knows Samantha knows her. They work together on like a launch of something.
Museum benefit. Even more bougie, yeah.
A benefit, and we've said this before, like benefits are a very like New York, we don't really have a benefit in London, do we? We're in the UK.
Plenty of stuff for like Stonewall and Albert Kennedy. They do sort of fundraising dinners. And I'm guessing that's the same thing. You throw on a nice party and people will come and they will eat your tiny finger food, and then you will hit them up for a raffle or a charity ticket or something like that. And of course it's a way of getting funding out of wealthy socialites.
Yeah, totally.
Meanwhile, Burger's back.
Yes. Yes. He comes back in the Hamptons.
He's giving Carrie the Zazazoo, which I think you can get a cream for.
This is the first mention of the Zazazoo. I forgot about that.
Fucking hell. Yeah, we'll talk about that. I want to talk about the Zazazoo. But yeah, what about the others? What about Miranda and Charlotte and Samantha? Because actually all of them get a fair bit of screen time this week. It feels like everyone is included.
Yeah, I like that there's a lot of things I don't like about this episode, but one thing I do like is I think it's it doesn't feel disjointed at all. It feels that it's got a very natural flow to it, and all of their storylines kind of converge, I guess because it's the finale. So Miranda and Steve have a moment back together. They sleep together.
In the hot, which is funny because it looked really hot. I wouldn't want to have sex when it's so hot.
Oh, there's a certain sort of sultry kind of Shakira vibe when it's like that. Like you put on a bit of She-Wolf. although maybe not at the moment because she's in trouble.
Tax exile. I'm going to say that's the one. If somebody put on Shakira when I was trying to get laid, I would just start to worry about have I paid my taxes.
I saw an amazing tweet that was like, people don't get annoyed about Jeff Bezos paying his taxes, and he didn't write She-Wolf or something.
Where's the lie? Where's the lie? Don't lie. Yeah. Posh Shakira.
And then Samantha is sort of thinking that she should get reparations from her relationship with Richard. So she informs him that she's commandeering his house in the Hamptons for a house party and proceeds to do so with memorable results.
Yeah, I will talk about it. Don't worry, we're going to get to them.
The cantaloupes.
The freeloading pussy posse, was it? I think there was a full description.
There's a point as well where she just calls them fucking freeloaders, which I enjoyed. Yes. And then, Charlotte and Harry. Oh, I love. They were
my favourite. God, it escalates quickly. It's funny, on this rewatch, I've realised we only met Harry 2 weeks ago and Charlotte's ready to say I love you.
Yeah, because the way I remembered it, they kind of like trundled along and then got serious in season 6. And yeah, I was the same. By the end of this, I was like, oh, they're talking about marriage and everything.
Based on very, very little screen time in this episode. And I think we only have 3 scenes of them in total. But we'll come to them after the break. So let's start, as ever. Actually, this week, let's start with Bobby Fine. His one and only appearance in the show. Bitsy will be back numerous times. Lest we forget, they actually have a child. Bobby and Bitsy have a child in season 6.
Yeah.
Have these people heard of being bisexual?
I wrote down the same thing. Because So for listeners who might not remember, the ladies, I mean, perhaps unsurprisingly, given previous behaviour, make fun of the fact that a man who they assume is gay is marrying a woman who they assume is straight. And lots of the jokes, it's played for laughs like throughout the episode.
Yeah.
I wasn't surprised, all very dated. But there's a point when Carrie... She said something like, oh, Bobby's gay and Bitsy's straight. But at no point has Bobby said that he's gay.
No.
Like.
Yeah. Yeah. It it feels damaging and also perplexing because when anyone has that kind of proximity to queerness, I always sort of think, what possible reason would they have to pretend? Like, Bobby Fine runs a piano bar, he's an investor in Broadway shows. Clearly he would be very comfortable describing himself as gay if he were gay. So what possible reason could he have for entering a lavender marriage? He doesn't need a beard. There can only be one reason why he wants to be with Bitsy, and that's because they're in love.
Yeah. And there are all sorts of, like, something I love about the way that things have gone, particularly in the last few years with like new generations and stuff, is what defines a relationship, which is like a running arc throughout the whole of Sex and the City, actually. What defines a relationship is becoming more and more like malleable and elastic. Like I was thinking about this. I've got 2 sets of friends who are best friends, and one cis woman. In both cases, one cis woman, one gay man. And to all intents and purposes, they're couples. And have said to me, like, well, yeah, well, we're a couple. But obviously they sleep with other people and are a straight woman and a gay man. So they're not a couple in that conventional sense. But they are a couple.
Of course. And this is the question we're going to attempt to answer this week, which is a relationship without the Zazazoo? I'm assuming by Zazazoo, Carrie means chemistry or libidinous chemistry or even just desire, I guess, really is what she's getting at, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like lust, desire, isn't it? Because at one point mm-hmm. she says, like, the Zazazoo is when you just see them and you want to, like, basically, she doesn't say this, but you want to, like, jump on them or, like, whatever.
Yeah. Fuck them and fuck them and fuck them.
Yeah.
I think, was that Charlotte once said that? So this is a tricky one, and I'm glad this has come up, because I think it is, it's something that is genuinely weighing on my mind, you know, and has influenced, that has weighed on my mind in my life, about, you know, the way my relationship has changed and the way my body has changed and the way, you know, my life has changed. And I will say that my 20s were very about the Zazazoo. And actually, as I moved through my 30s and now I'm in my 40s, undeniably, it's less about the Zazazoo.
Of course.
A mixture of the medication that I'm on, that has, you know, my medical transition, and also just getting older and having had the same partner for 4 or 5 years now. You know, it's different, Carrie. And I'm interested to know, and I'm glad we can talk about this, which is should I be sad about that? Should I be sad that my life isn't as full of the Zazazoo as it was 10 years ago, kind of? And is Carrie misguided for thinking that the Zazazoo is the most important thing in a relationship? Or am I, you know, because it's a very scary thing to think about, you know, at the end of this episode where Carrie says, you know, there are like two types of people in the world. There are those who settle. There are those who settle down. And there are those who refuse to settle for anything other than butterflies. Cue CGI butterfly.
Yeah, I wrote CGI butterfly in my notes. And that last line came across as very kind of like self-congratulatory to me. Like, oh, I'm not one of you lot who settles for like a blah, blah, blah. So I think... And I invite listeners to correct me or give other thoughts or contradict me or whatever you want. But I think that anyone who says there is still like exactly the same Zazazoo after like a decade of being with someone is lying. Like, yeah. I think like that's not true. And it's not a bad thing. Like, things just change. Like, and there are better things that come out of it. Like, you get so much more comfortable with someone. You get so much more cozy or funny with someone.
Like, with Max and I mean, I don't want anybody out there listening just to think that, you know, I think I have, like, this perfect sort of Instagram relationship that we should all be aspiring to. But it's honestly like we have our own language.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and in a language that is so loving. And, you know, that wasn't... there, you know, there are guys that I've been with who, you know, where there's been lots of Zazazoo, lots of throwdown or whatever. I think Carrie has previously referred to it as throwdown. I have had that, but with guys who were dreadful and were bad for me and were bad to me, they were unkind to me, they were selfish. So had I carried on hunting for guys that I was very sexually attracted to, but in lots of the ways were toxic. I mean, yes, don't get me wrong. You know, the ideal, I guess, is that you find someone you are physically attracted to who you are also compatible with and somebody who is kind and loving and compassionate. And that's, you know, that's why I married Max. You know, I felt he ticked all the boxes
for
me.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, I'm 41 now. You know, last week with Tia Coffey, we were talking about, you know, getting it on the Bakerloo line. That's not the relationship that Max and I have. You know, we're not doing handies on TFL. You know, that's not what we've got. But I would say to Carrie, it doesn't feel like I settled. It feel like I made an adult choice to marry a man that I was in love with. For lots of reasons.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, I think she's being... But again, are we surprised? I think she's being unrealistic and a dreamer. But that is Carrie's whole MO, so...
I mean, so if you remember 2 years ago, can you remember she met the good on paper guy?
Yes.
The doctor, when they were, again, back in the Hamptons.
Yes, actually,
I agree that sometimes you meet guys who are good on paper, but you just don't fancy them.
Mm.
That's different. I mean, I'm not in any way saying, you know, evolve, marry someone you don't fancy. You know, kind of that's not what I'm saying at all. But I think the idea, I mean, maybe that's why they've quite deliberately used this phrase, zazazoo, because like zigzagar, it could mean anything, couldn't it?
Yeah, and it's her trying to search for a word to describe it and then not being able to find one, so making one up, I guess, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And I guess she's right in some ways. When you know, you know. You know when it's right. And I think that was true of Max and I, in that we knew really early on that this was going to be something significant. So maybe that's the zazazoo.
Yeah.
Maybe the zazazoo is that sense of this is preordained in some way, or this is meant to be.
Yeah, and it's a frustrating thing because it sounds like if you say to someone who's like asking for relationship advice or something, it would be such an infuriating thing to be like, oh, when you know, you know, because it sounds like a cop-out, but it is true.
Yeah, I think when it comes to relationships, yeah, they are, and this is why it's really hard to give advice, because they are ephemeral and they are mercurial, and it's very hard sometimes to put into words the feeling of how you knew when it was right, kind of. And I wonder if that's what Carrie meant, which is she's looking for something a little bit magic. And I think she's right to expect a degree of excitement or magic. You know, I don't think that's asking too much in a romantic relationship, that you should feel euphoria.
Again, yeah, another.
I'm just thinking of all the other words you could have for zazazoo, kind of.
Yeah.
And so I think she's right. She should wait for someone who floats her boat, definitely. But it's, you know, this is a recurring theme with Carrie, because in a year's time, she'll have almost the same speech regarding Alexander Petrovsky when she gives him that massive monologue in Paris.
Yeah, she's got high standards, which there's nothing wrong with.
No.
But you also need to be a little bit realistic, I think, as well. You need to pair high, you need to not settle, but you need to also realise that, like, this is real life and not a Disney film.
I think you could reframe it as well. So Carrie seems to externalise zazazoo. It's something that men bring to her, when in fact I think zazazoo might be something that exists within you. I think the call is coming from inside the building. And I think yes. I think you are allowed to be like, to use another cliche, it's not you, it's me. You know, this isn't working for me. You know, I am not satisfied. I'm not content. I think content is a really good word. And and it's funny because I think as children, we teach each other to aspire to blissful happiness. Whereas actually I've realized as an adult that nothing has brought me more peace than contentment, actually. You know, a sense of, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else with anyone else. This is, I feel at peace. And, you know, in my 20s, I wasn't looking for peace. Whereas now, that's what I get with Max. I get a sense of peace.
But I also, I guess, without patronizing Carrie, I guess she isn't looking for peace, is she? She's looking for...
Not right now.
Real love.
Crazy, inconvenient love.
Yeah, she's looking for inconvenience is what she's looking for. Something I was going to say about this episode is, it is interesting because it redeems itself, because it's got all the ladies making fun of Bitsy and Bobby at the beginning, but then it kind of concludes that, like, they should be more open-minded, and these two people make each other happy. It is the kind of end conclusion of the episode, I think.
And they do that in a couple of ways. So at the very top of the wedding, after Bobby and Bitsy have got married, Nathan Lane, who, I mean, let's face it, Nathan Lane is an amazing performer. He, you know, does say, you know, if you had any money on it, it is real love. And Carrie sort of backs down and says she didn't have a penny on it.
Yeah.
And also as well, through the mirror of looking at Marcus and Stanford's relationship, where clearly Michael Patrick King had sort of thought, right, well, we've got Willie Garson up against an actor who looks like Marcus, who does kind of look like a model.
Yeah.
You know, is that a little unrealistic, especially on the ferociously body toxic gay scene.
Yeah.
Does this quite add up? And so, of course, Marcus, earlier in the episode, when the friends are very meanly speculating about Bobby and Bitsy, Marcus says, well, maybe she makes him laugh, or maybe they make each other a laugh.
Yeah.
And then at the very top of the episode, we see Stanford making Marcus laugh hysterically.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we understand perhaps what the core of their relationship is, which is Marcus finds Stanford hilarious, and that's why he's in love with him. Which, to be honest, finding somebody funny is much more important than finding them appealing visually.
Oh, God, 100%, yeah. I also thought it was just very... I made like a small note on Marcus and Stanford. I really liked that, and remembered it from when I had first seen the episode. The brief shot of them with the baby, with Brady.
Yeah.
And that had a real impact on me when I first saw it, because I'd never seen it before in my life. And I wonder if it was the first or one of the first shots of like a gay couple with a baby, like looking after a... Because that back then, like 20 years ago, like the thought of a gay couple looking after a baby was probably quite subversive for some people.
It was, yeah, I would imagine so, yeah. And again, one of those shames, because obviously, remember, we never find out what happens to Marcus Adan. He has vanished between season 6 and the first movie to enable the Anthony and Stanford stuff, which I was never a fan of, to be honest.
So,
it's funny because I came away from this episode really liking Bobby and Bitsy.
Yes,
and actually liking Miranda a bit less. And in particular, Miranda's very, very down on it. On their union, saying that she finds it to be a sham and that she doesn't believe it. She thinks it's a mockery of love.
The pink suede elephant in the room.
Let's, before we go to break, we should probably bring back Berger while we deal with Carrie. So Berger is back. Again, very handsome, but red flags. The red flags were there.
Yeah,
this man is an emotional train wreck.
He's got whiffs of the soft boy about him, hasn't he, Berger?
Mm-hmm.
I did love, like, SJP, as always, so good when she just keeps talking and you're like, oh no, stop it. Like, she does it so well when she's like, and you see Berger's face sort of like starting to change. And as a chronic oversharer, I relate to that. I've been Carrie in that situation.
Mm-hmm. So for context, if you've not recently rewatched the episode, Carrie, by total random chance, as a writer, by random happenstance, Carrie and Berger run into each other at a roadside like service station. Again, fortuitously, plot-wise, and Berger has split up with his girlfriend, who he was with not 4 weeks ago.
Convenient.
They've split up. So while they're all in the Hamptons, Carrie and Berger go for a little picnic where Carrie has total verbal diarrhea.
And Berger leaves so quickly on his motorbike, he leaves skid marks, which I thought, I enjoyed that line quite a lot. It's quite a memorable one.
And I can show you the skid marks.
Yeah, I enjoyed Carrie in that bit. did you also notice when they first bump into each other at the roadside bit, I don't know if this was deliberate or not, but as he's taking off his helmet, you hear a woman in the background saying, hey, you want a burger?
Amazing. I hope so. And I'm pleased to say as well, the flirting invisible laptop has gone this time as well.
Yeah.
To be replaced by an invisible motorbike at one point. It just feels like, is that how easy men scare?
Yeah.
Like this, that he jumped. So what's his reason for jumping on the motorbike? Was that it's, Carrie was like, what does she describe herself as? Emotionally slutty.
I think it's just baggage. Like, he sees all this, like, baggage, doesn't he? And flees. Mm-hmm. And also, like, I got the impression that they were... And this becomes their problem further down the line. I got the impression that they were already irritating each other a bit. Like, that. And I'm like, if this is the second... This is the, what, like, third time you've met and you're already pissing each other off, like, maybe it's not a good idea.
I wonder what the master plan was for Berger. I always wonder, was he meant to be endgame? Like, was he meant to persist throughout season 6? And actually, did they just realise the chemistry wasn't quite there? And I will say that, because obviously we're going to keep coming back to this. So On their first date, Berger flees. The first time they have sex is a disaster.
Yeah.
Then, obviously, ultimately, he leaves her in the middle of the night, leaving her with a post-it, which she will get to in good time. But this guy is kind of shit. They do not have good Zazazu. In fact, if anything, it's a bit of a fucking disaster.
But that's why I like it, though. Like, I like that she has, like, a kind of disastrous relationship with a guy who's, like, not a very good idea, because that's what happens to thousands of people in real life.
Do you know? You are very, very right. And I think, do you know what it is? It feels a bit like, and I've done this before in the past, like, once upon a time I dated a photographer. Upon a time I was dating another writer. And you sort of think, oh, this would be so good in a rom-com. Mm. Like two writers, you know, we'll just drink coffee all day and, you know, just tell each other about our projects.
It doesn't work. No, it
doesn't work in reality. And I think that's the thing. I think Carrie really wants Berger to work.
Yeah.
But he never does.
And you know what? It's so interesting because, like, there have been I've been through the same thing with fellow kind of, I don't want to say fellow creatives because that sounds so fucking like I hate myself, but yeah, people like me, should we say, and yeah, it doesn't, the idea of it is lovely and there are great parts about it. Like, it can be very entertaining. And like I was saying in the first episode where we met Berger, I love Carrie and Berger's dialogue because it's like, yes, these are two writers together talking and you can really tell, but it doesn't work. It's a train wreck. Always.
I wonder if that was the problem, that they're two Carries. Like, he's like a male Carrie.
He's
a Carrie.
And in fact, maybe I can imagine the showrunner saying that, being like, should we have her date? Should we do like have her dating a male Carrie?
Do you know what?
I bet they did.
I bet somewhere. Please, if you are Cindy Tupac or Michael Patrick King, I reckon somewhere down the line they said, right, Carrie is going to date the male Carrie.
Yeah.
God, he nailed it. Isn't he? There you go.
He is.
Sorted. Right, let's take a little break because actually that revelation, I'm going to need a sit down after that one. Join us again in a second where we're going to talk cantaloupes, lilacs, and
Chanel
Judaism as an ethno-religion.
Oh, God.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome back to So I Got to Thinking. This week we're talking about season 5, episode 8, the series finale, I Love a Charade or Charade. Fab. So I think we've addressed, is a relationship without the Zazazoo? I think we've dealt with that. We're answered it. We're fine. So let's come to the others. Shall we start off with Samantha?
Yeah. So for me, the pink suede elephant in the room of this episode and of this season, Samantha, if I'm correct, I was doing some research just before we came on. Samantha has not had sex in season 5.
She had some over-the-clothes action with Richard on a plane to Atlantic City.
Yeah, yeah. But as far as we know, Samantha has not had sex for a whole season.
On screen, no, you're correct. She has not had sex on screen, no.
Who'd have thought? Samantha.
Have any of them?
Well, yeah, that Charlotte
had sex with Harry.
Yeah. But I was thinking about that as well, actually. It's been dumbed down. There's been no, like, there's been no explicit sex. And I wonder if there was a reason for that. Maybe it got moved.
Maybe you're right. Maybe moved. It was on a bit earlier, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. But yeah, Samantha is throwing her A-list party in Richard's house. While wearing an incredible outfit.
Oh, the Chanel headscarf was so stunning.
The Chanel headscarf and then that like 60s dress and the slicked back hair, I loved.
she has a party, what was it? Party Crashing Pussy Posse is who arrives up. And I do love them. Where's their spin-off? Richard's kind of gold digging freeloaders, which is quite a negative stereotype about women. I think I would have loved a line of dialogue in there about how that they're all like Brown University kind of science majors. Kind of
like if they turned around and were like, oh, well, actually, she's studying in blah, blah, blah or something.
Like, hello, she's Richard's oncologist. would have been just like delicious.
Or I thought I would have loved it if it would have made it even more like of a bite to Samantha as well. If it had been Jenny Breyer and her friends, like all grown up, who had come back. Can you imagine?
Oh, my God. Yes. Oh, it's Kat Dennings, isn't it? Get Kat Dennings back. That could have just been
incredible.
I would fucking think I'd fuck them and their gay boyfriends. Had they turned up at the pool party with both NSYNC and Lads Bass's gay boyfriends, that would have been just next level. Because Sex and the City has looked at bimbos before, or bimbofication, with the amazing The Lawyer from Disney, when they go to Los Angeles and Miranda thinks she's talking to a sex worker, and she's like, I'm a lawyer at Disney.
Yeah. To be fair to Sex and the City, they don't often do that vibe, do they? They don't often make fun of, like, the quote-unquote bimbo. And they do it a tiny bit with this one, but not too much.
Because obviously Amelita, the Eurotrash, who Carrie is very forgiving. But again, everybody making fun of like breast enlargements just feels a bit 90s.
Yeah, it's a bit dated. Although I did enjoy Harry saying greetings from Silicon Valley. I loved that.
All that, and as well, people literally in glass houses, because not 3 weeks ago, Samantha was having her freshening chemical peel. Yeah. So are we in a position to be making fun of cosmetic surgery?
No.
Next season, Samantha is going to go for breast augmentation.
Yeah.
Let's keep track of the continuity. Yeah.
You can pool hang today.
I mean, it's annoying that they were eating her crisps.
I would be fuming. I would
like,
be
did you pay for those crisps?
I would be absolutely fuming. But I mean, not much to glean from this storyline, really. Like, Samantha throws a cantaloupe through a glass window and, like, embarrasses herself a bit. And then at the end, she's like, what's the opposite of Zazazoo? And Miranda says Zazazoo, which is, like, not funny.
I think somebody was holding a gun just off camera. The way Cynthia Nixon delivered that line was that you have to say it. It's in the script.
I bet Cynthia Nixon was like, this is shit.
This is bad. Come on. Although I say this, I've got to think of like a killer opening line to one of my TV projects. It's really hard when somebody's saying, have you got something funnier? Have you got something? Something really funny there. And I'm like,
and I struggle with, I don't know about you, but when I'm as a writer with either creative stuff or otherwise, it's the openers that I struggle with the most. Like, how do I start this?
I really struggle with when I'm left to my own devices, I find being funny is fine. But when the producers literally says, we need a jerk here. And I'm like, yeah. Oh no, no, there isn't any. Can she not just say cunt? That's usually what I do in those situations. Cunt. So yeah, poor Samantha, not over Richard, but all's well. It's very hard to feel sorry for her.
She'll be
Miranda
fine.
And Steve.
She'll be fine in season six as well, Samantha.
She's fine. It's all going to be fine.
Yeah.
Miranda and Steve.
Really liked. So they get back together. They have sex. After they're sort of in a grey area anyway, aren't they? A bit like they've got the baby and they're kind of like negotiating. They feel a bit like they're together and but they've also broken up and it's all a bit strange. And then they just have sex one evening or one afternoon. Steve's brought flowers over that Miranda loves. I loved it. I thought it was such a lovely, natural scene and it made sense to me.
And again, it's not the kind of Zazazoo that Carrie's speaking about.
Yes, totally.
And so I think there was at least some awareness that love doesn't necessarily always look the way Carrie thinks it's going to look.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I've learned as I've got older as well, which is stop trying to make your life into a Hollywood rom-com.
Yeah.
You know, because actually a lot of the tropes that you see in Hollywood rom-coms, like enemies to lovers. It's like, that's a fucking abusive man who is abusing you. You don't want him to become your lover. Like when you look at films like She's All That, you know, Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character is a shit who makes fun of a girl. And then she teaches him to be a better, more tolerant person. And then they fall in love. Fuck that shit. Mm. I'm not here to teach you how not to be a dickhead.
No.
You know, and I think that's the problem when you grow up on a lot of sitcoms or Hollywood movies. You know, you internalize these weird tropes. Whereas actually, Miranda and Steve's relationship is fucking chaos.
Yeah.
You know, he's a one-night stand that hung around. She was vile to him. He still hung around. They broke up because of money issues. They got back together.
She got pregnant.
Well, no, then they broke up again because of their maturity issues, because Steve got the dog and couldn't look after it.
Yeah.
Then they broke up. Then he had one ball removed. Then they fucked as a pity fuck and she got pregnant. Then he proposed with a borrowed ring and she said no. And then they had sweaty sex on a hot day. And, you know, and sometimes that's what love looks like.
And then Miranda met Che Diaz. So that's where we are now.
And with the words, hey, it's Che Diaz, the world ended. Oh, poor Steve. Oh, Steve.
When you put it like that, it is total chaos. I was going to say, when you said about like that, because obviously me and you grew up with like sitcoms and stuff, mm-hmm. and like Friends and all those kind of sitcoms. And I was going to say, oh, at least kids these days have better, more realistic stuff to base their relationships on. And then I remembered Euphoria.
So, well, I mean,
I guess it is more realistic in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think that Euphoria slightly knows what it's doing.
Oh, completely.
I mean, for me, the worry, the interesting one is Heartstopper, which is lovely. I think I liked it more than you liked it.
You know my thoughts on it.
I know, and I know the cast, and I know Alice, and I loved Heartstopper, and I cried and cried and cried because that's what I wish my life had been like. But what I will say, if you are a young LGBT person listening to this podcast, don't wait too long for a Nick Nelson to come along.
Yes.
You know, I spent a lot of my teenage years lusting after the rugby team as well, and they just called me a faggot. None of them fell in love with me and saved me from my eating disorder. That's just going to put that one out there.
Oh my God, reality bomb.
this is, I can't think, why haven't I been asked to write Heartstopper? I don't know. It's a lovely fantasy.
Yes.
It's a gorgeous fantasy,
yes.
But don't move into a fantasy.
Because
like Carrie, it can be an oubliette. You can get stuck in fantasy, actually. Thank you. I learned it from Labyrinth.
I liked Carrie when she said, so her and Miranda were talking about, like, sleep, were sort of joking about that she had slept with Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And Miranda was like, why can't you just have a baby with someone and sleep with them without giving the wrong impression? And Carrie turns around and says, that being what? That you're happy? in like a kind of, not in a bitchy way, but in a kind of like, maybe you're just happy and maybe you shouldn't worry about it so much, which I kind of liked her for that. And you can see Miranda's a bit like, oh, yeah, maybe it's fine.
And of course, jumping ahead one episode, of course, when Miranda says, I'm in love with Steve, Carrie goes, oh my God.
Oh, like, my
it's one of those
God,
where I think everybody could see that those two had some and unfinished then business.
In the same way, I also enjoyed it in this one, where, like, right after the sex scene, it just cuts to Miranda just being like, I slept with Steve. Which I found funny.
Oh, God, love them. And this is, not to be just the voice of reason, the voice of doom, but this is why the Che Diaz stuff sucks.
Yeah.
Because we really grew up on Miranda and Steve.
We did.
You know, kind
and
of.
And Hurricane Che Diaz just tore it all apart in front of us.
with very little consideration for Steve in the mix, but.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Maybe there's another season. Maybe things will get. I don't know. Let's see what happens. We'll wait and see. And finally, Harry and Charlotte, who we also love. Charlotte's learning. So, yeah, she behaves abominably. She criticizes his back hair. You can't change a man. You can't change a woman. You cannot fundamentally change someone, and nor should you try to.
Yeah. Yeah. But she kind of realizes that, which is good, I think. A scene that I loved was them eating pizza in bed, because it's like a very un-Charlotte thing, and it was a real sign of like the positive impact he's having on her. Like, when she's around him, she's like less, she's uninhibited, and she's like less uptight and less kind of, she's much freer when she's around him. So I thought that was nice. And I also adored when, as much as I didn't like the digs at Bitsy and Bobby, I adored when he made the little joke, like at the wedding, when he was like, and that's the piece of information she's been Von Muffling. And the other ladies all kind of gave approving looks to Charlotte, like, he can.
We like this one.
Yeah, like they were impressed. I loved that.
I'm trying to find the cut scene of Trey McDougal turning up at this pool party, which I've got a horrible feeling has been pulled off.
Oh no, was it on YouTube?
Right, let's see. Our favourite deleted scene shows a horrified Charlotte bumping into her ex-husband Trey McDougal in the Hamptons with her very sunburned beau, Harry Goldenblatt. Here we have the deleted scene.
Trey's here. He came with Fitzy's brother, didn't know it was Samantha's party. He's coming this way. Bye, Harry. Say bye-bye, Brady. Why do I have to see him like this for the first time? Just put your shirt back on.
What, you're ashamed of me now?
This is your fault.
Just cover up, please. Cover up.
Well, this is quite a surprise.
Hi. Yes, yes, it is.
How you doing? Harry Goldenblatt, I handled your divorce.
Oh. Well, so that's a fine how do you do?
Charlotte, honey, could you put a little sunscreen on my back?
There you go. So I'm not quite sure what that would have achieved.
So she's embarrassed of Harry in front of, that's quite significant, because she's clearly like embarrassed of Harry in front of Trey.
Yeah, and so I'm struggling to, I wonder if there were more cut scenes, because I don't quite see how that scene ties to what happens to them at the top of the episode, where she tells him that she's falling in love with him. So I can see why the scene was cut. Look at it that way.
Yeah. It all seems to just... I wonder if if there was maybe supposed to be an episode 9 and they had to splice everything together very quickly, because it does seem very quick. Maybe the Hamptons wedding was a two-parter, potentially.
Maybe, yeah. I just can't think what that was. Or was it that Cal McLaughlin had an episode left contractually? So he was... He was required to film. I just don't know. But that should have been the final appearance of Trey McDougal.
Interesting.
And I mean, Charlotte gets that coming. You know, Charlotte, you know, forcing Harry to wax his back. You know, she had that one coming. But then yes, so we're setting things up for season 6. So we've got Miranda and Steve gonna get back together. Berger and Carrie gonna start dating, and now we have not, it has to be said, my favourite plot of Sex and the City, which is Charlotte's conversion to Judaism. More than anything, has always felt a little tone deaf. They do sometimes lean into stereotypes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, not necessarily anti-Semitic, but certainly cultural stereotypes always have the potential to do damage because you are reducing. And it's interesting, I saw somebody discussing the difference between converting to Judaism and kind of sort of converting to sort of any other religion, in that Judaism is kind of like an ethno-religion,
yeah.
Which is it has kind of also existed kind of as a sort of a, like an ethnic group alongside being a faith group,
yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
So Charlotte going into Judaism as an Episcopalian white woman who has not been raised Jewish is kind of coming into the faith without a lot of the baggage that you would have had you grown up Jewish. You know, Charlotte has never experienced anti-Semitism in her whole life, whereas many, many Jewish people have. So there is a conversation around privilege and the way that Charlotte almost dances into Judaism for a man. Mm. So it's one that we can continue to discuss going into next season. But more than anything, it's just not the most interesting plot.
No, and I think it's another one of those similar to Samantha and Richard that just goes on that little bit too long.
I would fully agree, and that it does feel Charlotte's conversion does take a good chunk of season six, yeah. I'm afraid. So although it does lead to one of my favourite ever episodes, which we'll get to in season six.
Oh.
You'll know exactly which scene I mean. The scene at the synagogue mixer, which if I need to let some boo-hoos out, that is one of my go-to, things. But let's not get ahead of ourselves, because we're going to do a whole episode about it. Fear not.
Yeah.
But there we go. We have reached the end of little teeny tiny season five, Dylan.
Yeah, a little potted season.
A little potted season. I have a proposal for you, Dylan.
Oh, yeah?
Like, here we go. I've been thinking.
Yeah.
Like, And Just Like That isn't going to be out for, like, another year.
Yeah.
But I don't want to end on Just Like That. So what if we return later in the year with the first half of season six? Ooh. Now, fans, calm yourselves. When it was first aired, season six was split into two halves. So actually we are following the traditional broadcast pattern.
It would be very rude if we didn't emulate HBO, I think.
Exactly.
And do what they know what they're doing, HBO.
Mm-hmm.
House of the Dragon is quite good.
We enjoy Euphoria, yeah.
Euphoria, White Lotus, Succession, yeah. All great. So yeah, we're just going to follow in HBO's footsteps and do, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do it.
HBO, I'm poor. Please hire me. I love you, HBO.
I'll work for you as well. If you want me to write like a sort of queer TV show, if you want me to basically write, I'll write like season four of Euphoria if you want me to.
Mm-hmm.
Just hire me.
None of the cast will be left. They've all quit. But, But yeah, so I think that's what we're going to do. So we will, in the same way that HBO and Channel 4 broadcast the original run, we will have a season six part one.
Yes.
Basically everything before she meets Alexander Petrovsky, and then a season six part two, everything after she meets Alexander Petrovsky.
Maybe we could call it season one part une and season one part de.
Sounds
in honor
like
of the Paris episodes.
Yeah. And of course, then what we will do is we will sandwich and Just Like That season two in the middle of season six. Because the last thing we want to do is go out on a slightly down note.
And
although
we'll
presumably that will be Sex and City 2. So we want to save that for last, basically.
Or it might be on Just Like That season five. Who knows?
No! No!
We're going to be 60 years old recording on Just Like That season 17.
With all the cast grown up, with like Brady and Lily and Rose,
oh,
kind
no.
of in their 30s. No. firm no tap. But so that's, I think, what we're going to do. So fear not, listeners, our lovely listeners. We're very, very, very close to our millionth listen.
Amazing.
Very close to our millionth listener. So yeah. We will be back in the winter with season 6, part un.
Until then.
See you next Tuesday.
See you next Tuesday.
Okay, bye. Have a good autumn, everyone, and we'll see you later. Goodbye. Bye.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.